Translation. When the milk and curd are kept high on a swing, hanging from the ceiling, and Krishna Balaram cannot reach it, they arrange to reach it by piling up various planks and turning upside down the mortar for grinding spices. Being quite aware of the contents of a pot, they pick holes in it. While the elderly gopis go about their household affairs, Krishna and Balaram sometimes go into a dark room, brightening the place with the valuable jewels and ornaments on their bodies, and take advantage of this light by stealing. Purport. Formerly, in every household, yogurt and butter were kept for use in emergencies. But Krishna and Balaram would pile up planks so that they could reach the pots and would then pick holes in the pots with their hands so that the contents would leak out and they could drink it. This was another means for stealing butter and milk. When the butter and milk were kept in a dark room, Krishna and Balaram would go there and make the place bright with their valuable jewels on their bodies. On the whole, Krishna and Balaram engage in stealing butter and milk. From the neighborhood houses in many ways. Om gina timarandasya gina jina shalakaya chakshurun miritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam shtapitam yena bhutale svayam rupakadam mayam dadati svapadantikam vandeham shri gurun shri yuta parakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raganathanvitam Tam Sujivam Savadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Cha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jigatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Brindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpa trubhyascha kripa sindhu bhyevyacha patita nam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
A very philosophical text and purport. I don't know if I'll be able to sufficiently analyze the intricate philosophy we have here to discuss this morning. It's way too deep for me. So, how do we approach such a wonderful little text and purport? Well, I guess there is the topic of can we do what Krishna does? Should we behave as Krishna behaves? Can we follow his behavior here? Is stealing good? That's good. I want participation ready. Is stealing good or is it not good or depends? Morality. Basically, the topic of
what it means to be moral, the process of morality, how to apply it, where it falls short, and Krishna's behavior in relation to morality. It's a common discussion nowadays, right, with our increasingly atheistic perspective that I think I've had it once in the last week in my little attempt to go book distribution. One person said, no, you don't need religion to be good. Right? You don't need religion to be good. I can be perfectly good without religion. Secularism, humanism, various names for it. I also find it a little tricky, kind of to explain that no, you need God. And what came to mind, actually, there's one very nice essay written by His Holiness Tama Krishna Maharaj in the book Reason and Belief. And I couldn't get my hands on it between being asked to give the class and doing it. And I know Maharaj very, very minutely and very expertly discusses how you can't have morality without God in the center. Because one of the points comes to mind is, who decides? Who decides what's moral? Especially in our present age where it's all about, hey, what's good for you? That's the general ethos. What's good for you is good for you. If it works for you, it works. So this moral law is good for you and this moral law is good for me. So, but morality is a standard. Morality is a system of norms that we agree to abide by. So how can you decide and I decide different morals? It doesn't, it's not. It's a fallacious basis to say there's a standard of morals. There's not. If you decide, I decide. So who decides? Who decides? So, okay, society decides. I think even nowadays we have whatever morals are left are usually a fallout or a trace from the Victorian times. I think that's when we normally, the last great moral period, when everything was about standards and morals. The word was prudish as well a lot. But actually looking at the culture, as devotees, we have a certain degree of respect for the Victorian morals, basis of the Victorian morals. There was a nice book I found, I was once doing a catering program a few years back, and I came across a book in the house called A Handbook. What was it called again? A Handbook for Servants. Such a nice small little book. And basically it's for the servants, I think maybe Handbook for Servant, those in charge of servants as well. And it was from a very old time where the chief, the head housemaid, the lady who kept the house, and how she was to organize her servants. And the various rules and the various details of how the different servants in the household had to go about doing their duties. And it was very, very detailed. Very, very nice. And there was a lot of discussion, well, it's a small book, but details about the hours that the servants get off and when they take a break and when they don't take a break and if they don't do their duties nicely, how you correct them. Very proper, very nice. And I thought it was great. It basically, another term for it was a temple commander's dream rule book. How they would love to run the temple and have everybody follow. But often as those who have ever tried to be temple commanders, it's the most unfun job in the temple. At least the temple president's got some place and prestige. The temple commander is the guy who has to run around doing everything that no one else wants to do. Meant to be engaging others, but usually failing to do so. Everyone's too busy. But I thought, this is how a temple, this is a dream book for a temple to follow. I showed it to I was cooking for a bunch of yogi retreat, and I showed it to them, and I thought it was great. They all were disgusted. Yeah. I just thought it was like so basically outrageous, so old-fashioned, so terrible. And then I was like, oh, wow. We have a different view here of how things could be nice. And I guess their experience, because most people think of morals and prudishness, is that, okay, on the outside we did this, but inside we were something different. And that's generally where it did fall apart. And even the Victorian times is known for that. Externally, they were all very, very nice, very clean. But what you did privately, that was private. I came across have a friend in Ireland who does contemporary guitar, and he made a little video to go to a guitar, and he had a nice excerpt of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj in one of his more very strong speeches about the time has come where we can no longer have separate, private, and personal lives. They must not be separate. They must be one. Your private life is as good as your public life. This is how a leader must be. Speaking like this in a very wonderful way, he spoke how to empower a leader to be a real leader. You can't have two lives. You must have the one life. Your morals in public is the same as your morals in private. That's morality. That's how it has to work. That's how you will have substance to your moral, your morality. Because people kind of think of morals, you should do this, you shouldn't do that, in a very, I guess mostly a kind of matter of inconvenience, right? You have to kind of just do it because it's kind of polite to do, it's good to do. But the problem with modern morals and why atheistic religions are gaining ground and attacking attacking religions and attacking the idea that you have to have a religious-based moral system is that there's no goal. They don't know what's the point of the moral. Where is it leading to? What's going to be the benefit if I follow this moral? Because the idea of a moral, it's a little inconvenient. I want to do this, but I have to do this. Krishna has to wait until he's given butter and milk. But that's inconvenient. He doesn't want to wait for it. There it is. Just a few feet above my head. I can't quite reach it, so let's get a wooden, let's get this, let's grab what's around, get up and get it. I'm not going to wait when it's convenient for Mother Yashoda to feed me or the neighbors to feed me the buttermilk. I'm going to get it now. I want it now. And I was thinking, actually, this mood, like Krishna wants this, he wants it now, and he's doing mischievous things to get it now. It's kind of like a Shreyas and Prayas thing, too. Morals are Shreyas. You want something, but for a little inconvenience, you don't take it now, you wait. Because it's, and Prayas is, forget it, I'm going to take it now. I want to enjoy the moment now. Which again, very modern thing, just enjoy the moment. But people don't have goals. So people, is it just some polite behavior we have just to get on? A nice little example I came across again from Chaitanya Charitamrita. He is always a wonderful ocean of nice analogies to grasp things. And he said, it's like getting in your car and going for a drive just to stop at the traffic lights. Oh, good, there's a traffic light. Oh, it's red. Good, I'm going to get to stop. Oh, no, it's gone green. I have to move now. Oh, no, there's another traffic light. It's red again. Great, I get to stop again. No, who does that? No one does that. And actually, when everyone sees the red turning amber, it's the foot goes down. Oh, the other way around. Green going amber. Get it before it turns red. So it doesn't stop me. You know, because I want to get to my destination as soon as possible. So moral codes in modern view are like that. They're a little, okay, I have to stop at the red light. Because if I don't stop, I will get in trouble. A car hit me, or I'll hit by a car, or I'll get pulled by the police. So under the prospect of a threat or something inconvenient, something that's I won't like, I will obey the rule. I will stop at the traffic lights. But the point is I want to get somewhere. So moral principles, unless you to be nice, to be kind, to be good, to put that, unless you know why you're doing it, as soon as it's inconvenient, you just don't do it. You stop doing it. And that's what's happening in modern society. And specifically in religious principles, when they're trying to tell you to be moral. You should be kind, you should be nice. This is what religion's about, be kind to others. But unfortunately, the whole Western Brahmanic religions, when they try to tell you to do this, they don't connect it to why. Why you want to be kind, the benefit of being kind, and connecting it to how it's an integral part of your relationship with God to be kind, and your cultivation of relationship with God to be kind to others. Not just kind for the sake of kind. And also this general thing, when you're good to someone, you follow a moral principle, it's for something for you. It's always some payback out of it. I think even parents teach children, right? When parents teach your children, now Johnny, share your sweets with Jack. Go on, share your sweets. And why does she teach him that? Why doesn't parents teach their children to share their sweets? Self and values, maybe that'd be a nice thing. What's the other reason they might want to? Johnny, share your sweets. Okay, it's a Christian thing to do. Okay, yeah. But what are the reason? Yeah. They're very nice, yes. Any other reason? You're not the only one in the world. It makes you think outside of someone else. Okay. Because if Johnny shares a suite with Jack, what's Jack obliged to do? Share a suite with Johnny. It's kind of like when you the idea of share and be nice, because then, okay, it'll definitely expand your conscience a little bit, and this is make you not be so self-centered. But really, it usually is taught so they'll be nice to you, or we do that. And that's that I understanding Mother Irma explained very, very wonderfully, that very heavy Bhagavatam text, how there is no good principles in non-devotee. Only good character will be seen in the heart of a devotee. So what, really? I see so many wonderful good characteristics in non-devotee. But good characteristics, but the Bhagavatam standard is you give and nothing back. Nothing back at all. That's a good quality. Because the quality is then, it's not, there's no break in it. It's a hoitiki, it's not unmotivated, it's uninterrupted. A good quality that stops at a certain point wasn't really the quality, wasn't really in its pristine state. Good quality means uninterrupted. You have it, and you have it under all circumstances, all conditions. And that's what the devotee's heart is capable of. So when people, religions are teaching people to be good, be kind, be nice, but without a clear concept, we're trying to get somewhere. We're trying to get to a state of God consciousness. We're trying to cultivate our relationship with God, with Krishna. But because there's so little information about God, then they don't have that capacity to see what is the goal of the morals. But in, thank God, literally, in we actually, when we have the knowledge of the Vedic scriptures, it is, we have a real goal of why to be good. Because if I don't follow a moral etiquette, then I'm going to, it will interfere my cultivate my relationship with Krishna. And that's what I want. That's the highest thing. That's what I look forward to. That's the purpose of everything I do, is to pursue the goal of my awakening my relationship with the Lord. I haven't been informed here, but in Soho Street at the moment, we're obliged to talk about book distribution. It's as it is, though all the texts are specially chosen. And I was thinking, even with this text, there's two very nice ways we would connect. One is, I don't do book distribution. Actually, we have this list of Janatai and Nam Sanctum. We have this list of at the end of the marathon, best group and best over 60s person and best Grihastha group and different categories of people who are. He hasn't got one for me though, and I said he should have one for me. Best recovered non Sankirtan devotee. Because I did one marathon, that was in 1993, and I've never done it since. So I've done Soul Street, squeezed more days of me out in the street than I've ever done since then. So I want to tell John, I make a category for me. Best recovery, best rescue case. But it's kind of, it is very simple, now when you think, it's just like, and the thing is, this has changed my life, and I'm sure it's going to change yours. Actually, it is going to change yours. And being a little convinced about that, especially when I was studying like this, when the sad situation in the world, the people kind of, even when they do be good, are good, which is reducing, then they don't know why to be good. But we know why to be good, because we're trying to be good for Krishna. And the whole realm of activities and lila and pastimes that we want to enter, the excitement of Krishna consciousness that we know lays ahead of us, the clear motivation to be good, to follow. When you hear about that, when you don't hear about that, be good for the sake of being good, or being good because you won't get punished. It's really not very exciting at all. In introducing Krishna to people, sometimes I say, if you have a party and you're making a list of people to invite to your party, who thinks, okay, number one, God. God? He'd be sitting there in the corner with his notebook, maybe his pad or his computer, and taking notes of, that wasn't so good. Oh, I shouldn't have said, oh, you kind of shouldn't have said, shouldn't have done that, shouldn't have said that, and, oh, that's too much. This constantly judging personality is like very unattractive. Very unattractive. But Krishna, thank God, is the all attractive. So for us, when we want to have any sort of party, the first person we want at the party is Krishna. Because no one parties like Krishna. And like I said, and actually, some people saw us in Harinam recently, and they said, wow, you guys having a good, what was it? on the Saturday World Enlightenment weekend. Some people saw us and said, God, you guys are having a good time. I said, yeah, no one knows how to party like the Harrys. Drink-free party, and we can party all day and all night, and it just gets more fun and more fun. And the end of it, we're not like hung over a bench puking our guts up. We're like, okay, might have a few sore muscles and a few of that, but minor drawbacks of letting go in the party mode. So Krishna consciousness is so attractive, and Krishna is so attractive, and so much fun, and that's why these pastimes are here. Krishna came to share, to give this to us, to draw us, to attract our mind. And especially, of course, these childhood pastimes. Like who doesn't go when the child walks in the room? It's usually not, one child left, because once a child walks in the room, everyone's attention is focused on the child. We're drawn to the innocence and the cuteness of children. So what speaks when it's Krishna? The sweetness and innocence of what he's doing. He wants his butter, he wants his milk, and he wants it now. And what he would do to get it. But on that point of... Did I finish my traffic lights thing? So with traffic lights. All right, so the one of the... So then for us, yeah, so Krishna's... His moral behavior, so we're given moral behavior and we're given reason to be moral. And devotees, of course, we're trained to be moral. But I sometimes joke also that even though we have our regular principles and we're a lot about rules and regulations, devotees love breaking the rules. Devotees, we just love when it's like some regulation and we kind of like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And we find some reason or some justification to break a rule, because there's a rat in it, or that we find some reason to do it. I was thinking even one of my, in relation to morality too, there's this concern that people who moral become self-righteous, become a little full of yourself, a very moralistic person, always do the right thing. So one of my personal moralistic stances, and one that I think in ISKCON we still struggle with, if somebody makes something, you don't steal their work by copying it, unless they've given you permission to do it. And I always, like, for years, somebody in ISKCON was like, one person bought a CD and 100 people copied it. It was kind of like the standard, like, we don't... It's like, just go, listen for Krishna. And kind of like, it's Krishna constant to do. So it definitely seems like in our society, we are still very much struggling with this understanding of how moral we should be. And in the name of transcendence, we don't have to be so moral, because it's for Krishna, or for me, in Krishna, or something like that. Basically, mostly me, and maybe a bit of Krishna. So prematurely transcending moral behavior is an interesting that's a big discussion and something that we're working on. Sheshapu gives us... always has these wonderful seminars on ethics, morality and ethics. And he never, it's always a churning discussion, because there is no one set thing. That's the nature. There is no one exact way how to behave. It's always a time, place and circumstance understanding, and how to decide what is the best thing takes a Krishna conscious intelligence to do that. But at least we have to be educated in these morals and these norms. So devotees, for the most part, we observe, we follow the morals in society, the laws of the land. Again, we understand in our early days, ISKCON pretty much institutionalized the idea that we don't have to follow the norms and laws of the land. We're transcendental, and therefore we're above it all. We've moved on a little bit from that, for the most part. Sometimes devotees, Sastri Maharaj tells this nice incident on a plane once. He was on a plane and he was getting to a seat, and at one point he kind of slightly pushed past one lady, and he was in his full sannyas clothes, and the lady went to you, "That's not very religious or spiritual, is it?" And he immediately felt really bad, really guilty. There he was, dressed in the full sannyas clothes, and this lady was getting his case for not being a little considerate, being a little kind. So we understand that it's a very important thing, a very nice way to preach is to consider the norms and morals in society and follow them. And people then, they're very nice, they're very attractive. So to help people, acts of kindness connected to Krishna will draw people to Krishna. But sometimes devotees, of course, don't follow the norms and morals. And we have, of course, the famous incident of... What's the famous incident of not following moral codes? All right. Yeah, definitely trans theft there. Yes, yes, that's definitely one. Poor man, bewildered and bemused by... take him, let's go. That's one. Something else from Shastra, the most famous incident of questionable moral behavior. Well, there's quite a few, but there's probably the one that's the most famous, I would think. Yeah, yeah. I think that's the... I also think that's because we have poor Maharaj Yudhisthira, famed for his perfect morality, being told to be immoral. And not just being told by who? Yes, Vishwanatha. And Sukracharya? Yeah. They're all things are permissible, yeah. So the Vedic culture has, again, not just like the Western morals are like a little superficial, but dharma, of course, the word for moral dharma is very, very, well, it's infinitely dynamic. There's no, you can't box dharma into anything. It's something you learn, you're educated in it, but it's a constantly... growing aspect. What's right at one point for one person, one situation, will be different the next point, another for somebody else. It's not a stagnant thing. But yeah, just on the point of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and again, his brother too, of course, the wonderful poor Arjuna, starts off Bhagavad Gita very nicely quoting all the reasons why, very good reasons, nice moral, dharmic reasons why he shouldn't fight. Good reasons. And Krishna then speaks somehow, no, that's correct, but there's a higher moral here you have to follow. But Maharaj Yudhisthira, we understand, Arjuna became bewildered by his emotional state, but Yudhisthira Maharaj got completely it was very challenging, we understand, for him to put aside his reputation, basically. Is that what a devotee, there's nothing more precious, let last, a devotee completely renounced, but his reputation. So we seem to even have Maharaj Yudhisthira having this attachment to that. I can't do this, it's wrong. It's. And of course we understand, so a compromise comes up. Jai Shishi Radha Gokul Nanda Ki Jai, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishi Gonitai Ki Jai. So yeah, there's a higher principle. The higher principle, therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira had to understand in his morals. And Arjuna also had to understand. He gave all these moral reasons, but Krishna, we understand, gives the finals, the highest lesson of morality in the end of the Bhagavad Gita when he says, abandon all dharma and just surrender unto me. Abandon all moral principles and just surrender to me. That's the only moral principle you have to have. But of course, in understanding that, we're educated in all these, of course, think of the word moral and ethics is almost etiquette, the etiquette that we're trained as devotees. All these little things that we're told to do, they're ways for us to achieve the highest morality of remembering Krishna. Shiva Maharaj says this point in his, for most of us here who know Shiva Maharaj, he's very famous for the little things, little details, and he's very specific and one thing's very exacting. And anybody around him, sometimes it can be a little... a little demanding, a little intense, but it's in the detail, it's in the small things, the little details and regulations that you're brought, your attention is brought to, that this is something that Krishna wants me to do. So let me be very attentive to the small things, because Krishna's in the detail, or I say devotion's in the detail. It's where you kind of manifest, because it's the pinpointed focus of your attention when you're very clear on the detail. So we know that in Shastra there is unfathomable, especially those who've dared enter the Hari Bhakti Vilas or other Manu Samhita, and I can go, whew, okay, that's for a previous age, or that's Prabhupada, it's too much.
we get very quickly get daunted by the unlimited codes and ethics that we have to follow. But in them, the goal of them is two. I would say the two lessons of morality in the Bhagavad Gita Krishna gives is sarva dharma pricha, abandon all dharma, send unto me. But to do what? Man manabhava mad bhakto maji mamno skru. That's the idea, to always think of Krishna and always bow down to him and serve him. In the traffic light example, there's the point that we have to obey the traffic light. But sometimes if there's a criminal act going on, sometimes we've seen these in America, like to make these chases, right? And there's the cars zooming down the highway. But who's going faster than the criminals? Who's going faster than the criminals? The police. Yeah, the police. They're going through all these red lights too, aren't they? They're breaking all these lights too. They're breaking the law. Look at them. The police, he broke the law too. He went through the traffic lights. Yeah, but he's trying to catch you. So sometimes in the name of catching criminal, we might have to break the law. So that's where, again, we think, what do we do to get people connected to Krishna? What do we do? And how sometimes we might be a little generous with the truth, a little bit generous, or maybe a little, liberal with the truth, a little bit. Yes, we are a little bit specific. To get to the goal of connecting people to Krishna and thinking about Krishna. So, but in an application point of this, I'm thinking, but devotees, again, we have to remember in our society and even in ourselves, our tendency to prematurely abandon these things, the name of transcendence, that's something that as a neophyte tends to do. And our society will surely, definitely, will grow and be taken much more serious when we have as an institution stronger moral principles. We have it in the philosophy. We clearly have it in the philosophy, but in our dealings and our behavior, we're still somewhat wanting to understand that in the name of transcendence, I'm not going to do this because there's a moral principle here that's more important for me to follow than just slapping transcendental. I'm transcendental. Krishna's transcendental. And step over prematurely morals and principles. But to know, I was thinking, okay, so the point is to gauge, because you always want to know, how do you know if it is the right thing to do, is that the moral principle says do this. I'm going to do this for Krishna. I'm going to do this. But it should hurt. It should pinch that I'm not observing this moral principle, because this is Krishna's moral principle. This is what the Shastra said to do. It said do this. I'm not going to do this now because it would actually not work in this situation, because I need to connect this person to Krishna somehow. But it should pinch. If it doesn't pinch, if it's like, "Ooh, I don't get to follow that rule, great, because I'm going to do this now for Krishna," then bells should go off. The alarm bells should go off. It's Krishna's rules. We should be very excited to follow all the moral principles that we're given. But at times we have to transcend it. We do have to. But if it's done with a sense of like rah rah ki jai too much, then we have to watch. We have to see. Yeah, so I guess just, and then I'll finish a little bit on often this point about Krishna's, so he's stealing. On the whole, Krishna and Balaram engage in stealing butter and milk from the neighborhood houses in many ways. So we understand, here we heard today the grinding mortar put upside down and they stack planks up. Especially, it was interesting, the point in the text, they picked holes with their hands. I always kind of wonder how they did, because I picture all their earthen pots, right? And they're usually quite hard, but somehow or other, Krishna and Balaram made holes with their fingers in these earthen pots and stole the butter and let the milk drip out and drank it. So how to become perfectly moral while following the activities of a supposedly
on immoral behavior. Of course, so we know Krishna, and again, this is the point where the Western world and the religions have problems with when they encounter Krishna. They say, how can this be good behavior? How can this be correct? Especially in this, he steals, and he steals, does all sorts of immoral. Actually, not even all sorts. Actually, even in Krishna's, in the canon, we have Krishna's Leela. The amount of things he does are immoral. There's certain some, and they're glorified, and we love it. But there's also a huge body literature, a huge part, the vast majority of Krishna follows moral behavior. He follows religious codes, especially when it comes to Mathura, and more so even Dwarka, which the predominant part of Krishna's pastimes takes place in. We hear repeatedly, Krishna was the perfect husband, the perfect king, the perfect he followed, for the most part. So Krishna is, yeah, so people prematurely hear about Krishna, they think this is immoral. But they don't, they try to, with their limited understanding of God, they try to impose the morals that we have to behave and we have to follow by to control ourselves, and he should do the same thing too. But the term, Chaitanya Champu, is that Krishna is transmoral. We've moral and immoral, but Krishna's transmoral. He's above all morality. Because the purpose of moral codes is understanding is, I want to do this, but it's something for me, it's something based upon a selfish want for me, and we know God, Krishna, doesn't have that. He doesn't have a selfish desire. So there's no question of a moral code or moral behavior or immoral activity. Everything he does, and we even sound at these things, why is Krishna doing this? Why is he picking holes in the pot, and why is he stealing the button? Why is he breaking these things? Because he just excites his mother like anything. She just gets so excited by the whole thing because he's doing it for the pleasure of his mother. And Shri Maharaj's recent book, Damodar Jeevani, this, the whole glorification of mother, he showed how Krishna is just surrendered like we can't imagine to pleasing his mother. So she has all these rasas and experiences and taste that when she comes and she sees the broken pot and she sees like, who did this? It couldn't be my Krishna. It couldn't be my boy. That's not possible. But then look at these handprints and look at these footprints and look, where's it going? What's that noise I hear? That sounds like his anchor bells. It couldn't be Krishna. That's not my boy. She goes out and she sees him and then she sees Krishna's fearful face and they're running. So he's doing it for her pleasure. It's all for Krishna's absorbed in the pleasure. And what to speak of the devotee, of course. The devotee is also absorbed when they do things, all for the pleasure of the Lord, all for the pleasure of Krishna. So then there's no the question of ultimate morality is when it's for the pleasure of the Lord, and the Lord even does it for the pleasure of his devotees. And again, if people raise the point of this being Krishna's behavior, but then we can direct them towards, this is why we have to read the first 9 cantos, the Bhagavad, before we get to the 10th canto. Specifically in the 9th canto before, there is so much immoral behavior. The 9th canto is like, it's like scandalous, like anything. There's no, I think of all the cantos where there are all sorts of scandalous behavior goes on. And especially all sorts of fall downs going on, all sorts of behavior due to people getting caught, affected by lusty desires. You have King Ayati doing his whole thing with his sons, and you have Pururava and the king chasing her, and then you have Subari Muni, and there's constant reference about warnings about you have to be morally behaved, you have to be in trouble, otherwise you'll end up in trouble. So there's constant reminders throughout the build-up. And what is moral behavior? What is devotion? And what is, before you get to hear the form of the perfect devotion in Krishna and his pastimes, you hear what is devotion first. So the first 9 cantos train us to understand what is devotion. And that's one point that's nicely brought out in Vritchar Sura, in 6th canto. There's one prayer he makes, the exact same prayer as Queen Kunti. Let the river of my mind flow like the Ganges to the lotus feet of Krishna, because this is all I want. They both say the exact same prayer. But is Queen Kunti and Vritchasura the same? We had Queen Kunti sitting here in Vritchasura. We hear the Vritchasura's copper eyes and sharp teeth and the hair like flames. And we have Queen Kunti, this beautiful, elderly lady. But they're both making the same prayer. They're both absorbed in the same devotional sense of Krishna. So the Bhagavatam teaches us what is the real heart and substance of devotion. It's the feeling for Krishna that we have in the heart, not the external. and because morals are about externals very much. So when we get to hear Krishna, it's pastimes, we've been trained what real bhakti, what real devotion is about. So then we don't question. Until the Christian thing came to India, there was no question of, people didn't think, oh, Krishna's immoral behavior. It's all a very Western recent thing. And they try to understand Krishna Leela without philosophy, without education. And then just to finish on a quick Sankirtan note, this is why we go out. Because it's so, it's people who know nothing about religion. I actually personally, like there's a nice priest around the corner, there's a St. Patrick's Church in Soho Square. And I got to know the local priest, and it's one of my little feathers, because Jalan Tiber said, he doesn't like us, he never liked us for years. He's got to like me. So I think, every time he sees me, he stops and says, hello, you out, what did he say to me the other day? Distributing your things. Oh, yes, Father, yes, very nice. So he's well-wishing. So, and I keep saying, I'm not very bold. I thought, can I sit down and have a real talk with the Father? Kind of like to like really encourage him in his Christian ways. Obviously, not even for a second consider anything otherwise, but encourage him by connecting him somehow to how static Krishna is. I don't have to talk about Krishna, but talk about God, but bring in what we know about Krishna to his understanding of God, so he gets more excited about God. Because that's what Krishna does. Krishna gets us very excited. Krishna gets us really excited, because there's nothing more exciting than Krishna. And getting excited by Krishna, we like telling people about it too. We just like telling people about what you're excited about. You want to share it with others. What's the point of being excited unless you immediately tell somebody about it too? It's got no meaning unless you want to tell someone. So we get excited by our experiences and our merciful contact with Krishna, and let's go. To whatever degree we're capable of it, whatever degree. And if I stand out for 6 hours and do two books, that's it. That's what I'm capable of. But to those two people, I'm convinced I've shared Krishna with them, and therefore it's nice. Okay, I'll stop there. I'm pretty much on time, unless somebody had one very short question.